This is Focus with Emma Griffiths on ABC Radio Brisbane.
Who's your favourite PI? You know, private eye, private detective. There's Sherlock Holmes. There's Magnum PI. The Pink Panther. Although, is he a police officer, actually? Anyway, the pop culture world knows the appeal of the crime-busting, mystery-solving trope. But right here in Brisbane, as you're watching the latest crime drama on TV, there are people doing the work in real life. One of them is Keith Shafirius. Can't wait to hear what he thinks of all these pop culture pretenders. Now, Keith has been a private investigator for 48 years, based in Brisbane, and he's the longest licensed private investigator in Australia, still working. Now, this is a man with a story, which you'll get to hear over the next hour or so. And as always, you can chime in. I mean, I've got a load of questions for Keith, but if you've got questions for Keith, then the number is 1300 222 612. To text, 0467 922 612. And then you could always email the Focus team, focusbrisbane@abc.net.au. What's a question that you've got for Keith Shafirius, Australia's longest licensed private investigator?
Mr. Holmes.
At your service. Master of Arts. Doctor of Philosophy. Principal of the Priory School. It is not every day, Dr. Huxtable, that so distinguished a castaway as yourself is beached upon the hearthrug.
Oh, we may have to act quickly, very quickly. I should have known from the beginning what was happening here. It was so simple.
What was simple?
Oh, you'll have to trust me. I need your help. Lucky's been murdered, and Molly is missing again.
Molly? What's Molly got to do with it?
Everything.
He came here to end me, to investigate a murder, and to solve a riddle. First, Richard Abernethy, he dies suddenly. And then at his funeral, his sister Cora Galaccio announces that he has been murdered. But then the very next day, she herself is killed most brutally. Her companion, Mademoiselle Gilchrist, is poisoned with the arsenic. Madame Helen Abernethy is struck on the head and is rendered unconscious. The deeds of the house go missing, and the will that is forged is read. So now, which, if any, of these events are linked?
Who's there?
Magnum.
Magnum who?
I say, Magnum, I wonder if you would be so kind as to finally, if not graciously, return. You're going on a journey, Magnum.
Yes.
I see. Perhaps a lengthy one.
Perhaps.
How long?
I don't know.
And where are you really going? Now, I insist you tell me what you're up to.
I am up to a case.
See, we've loved it, haven't we? The private investigator. It's all over pop culture, but what is it like in real life? IRL, as the young'uns say these days. Well, Keith Shafirius can give you an idea. Hello, Keith.
Good morning, Emma.
Listening to that, are they a bunch of pretenders? Like, are there any pop culture PIs that you actually like?
Believe it or not, Emma, I never listen to any of them or watch any PI shows.
It'd drive you crazy, wouldn't
Absolutely.
It?
Absolutely.
What do you reckon you'd say?
rubbish.
It's just not what it's like.
No, it doesn't happen like that in real life.
No. Now, just updating you as well, there may be something to investigate at the Brisbane airport at the moment, because there has been issues with screening there, and the airport's just put out some fresh information saying that the investigation into the security matter at the international terminal is ongoing. Some passengers are being rescreened. A number of international flights will be delayed. So we'll keep you up to date with that as well. Doesn't sound like a lot of fun. Now, Keith, you're still working. You're travelling the world. You're sniffing out secrets for people. There must be a little bit of romance, a little bit of appeal to it that comes across in those TV shows.
Well, there is, considering I don't watch many of those TV shows. Every day, every job is different. And that's why I've loved it so much over the years, and just thoroughly enjoy it. Can't wait for the next day to come and the next case to come in. Although I still get lots and lots of cases. I've got some good guys working for me now, because I want to slow down a little bit and relax.
Now, I read actually, Keith, that you had a very large private investigation company here in Brisbane, but you've handed that over, basically, mm-hmm. to a couple of employees, and you're now working independently.
Yes, again. That's correct. Just working from a website and working for myself with a number of good people out there in the field doing the work for me.
Why not retire?
I tried that once. It was too boring.
Really? Like, you know, relaxing on a beach and doing whatever you feel like? It was just too boring.
That's right. Yeah, and lots of trips overseas, and very much travelled when I had the larger business, and a lot of international child recoveries that I went into various countries and crept in and slipped out of without being noticed.
Yes, there are lots of stories from you, I know. I want to go back, though. 48 years ago you began, so 1970?
69.
1969. So how did you get into it?
Well, Emma, I always wanted to be a policeman, right from when I was a little child at school. The teacher asked us to write down, as they do, what do you want to be when you grow up? And I wrote down a policeman, a P-L-E-A-S-E, man. I couldn't even spell policeman then. And when I was 16, I applied to join the police cadets, but there were too many. They told me to come back when I was 19. I didn't. I joined the Air Force instead and spent 6 years in the Air Force and was seconded to ASIO for 12 months. And
what did you do in the Air Force?
I was in service police. Actually, I went in there as a cook, would you believe, just to get in there, and remustered to service police after a couple of years.
So there's always been this feeling in you that you wanted to get the bad guys, make the world a better place thing by doing that.
Well, I suppose you could say that. And then in 1969, I took up with a state policeman, who had left the police force, and we set up a private investigation business, and 3 years later I bought him out, and it just never looked back from there.
What was Brisbane like then?
Pretty sleepy place. You got to know almost everyone who walked up and down Queen Street, and had to give out of the way, wear different hats, so people didn't recognise me.
What do you mean, go undercover?
Well, sort of, yeah. You couldn't walk up Queen Street without people saying, oh, hi, Keith, what are you up to today? What's doing? What's happening? And
that's not so good if you're trying to be a private detective.
You need to keep out of the limelight.
So if it was a pretty sleepy town in 1969, Keith, what were some of the first cases that you had come through?
Back in those days, it was mostly matrimonial and divorce cases, getting evidence of adultery. And that went through from up until 1975, when the Matrimonial Causes Act changed, and you didn't need
No-fault divorce came in.
No-fault divorce.
May I be so dare as to ask, how do you get that evidence? How did you get that evidence?
Snooping. And you didn't have to catch them in the act of adultery. In circumstances where adultery could have or would take place, so it's a matter of watching people go into the house and the lights go out, and you wanted to go in and take a few pictures of them sleeping in bed. And we always waited for 1 hour after the lights went out, because most people would have probably worn themselves out and gone to sleep by then. It was always a good timing.
Oh, the things you know about people, Keith Chevrierus. Now, Keith has been a private detective in Brisbane, but working around the world for 48 years, and is telling his story to you today as well. So, actually, this brings me to what the first comment was when we were talking to people and saying, oh, Keith Chevrierus, he's been a private investigator, he's in Brisbane. They said, oh, he must do a lot of infidelity work. And that's not the case nowadays, is it?
It's not the case now. It's a much smaller percentage, probably. Oh, in percentage of the business, it's probably only 10% of what happens now. It's more to do with abused children in a marriage, and there's some really sad cases of children, young children, being sexually abused by a father.
Oh, gosh.
Occasionally by a mother. And unfortunately, the courts are not doing anything about it. And you know, many cases, the police just say, asked the child to say that about the father. And even though the child can tell a story, can draw pictures and all sorts of stuff, and these poor little children from, the youngest was a little girl of just under 3 when she was being abused, and pardon me, and I couldn't say on air what the father was doing.
Mm. I've got some. Yeah, Keith. Well, that's obviously a very dark side of the work that you've seen there. What is it like when a parent comes to you and asks you to do that sort of work?
Well, it's very sad, and I never get personally involved in these sort of cases. I keep an arm's length from it. Otherwise, I'd be upset just so much all of the time. But when they come to me, I'll assess the case and have a look at it and tell them which way to go about getting the evidence, how to get the evidence, and assist them. And my people will do what they have to do to get that evidence, including close surveillance and maybe using listening devices or cameras. Listening devices are illegal to put in. They're not illegal to own, but to put into a house. But it does get the evidence of what's going on and conversations, and sometimes a little hidden camera inside the house gets, and 8 times out of 10, we would get the evidence required for the court to stop the father, and in 1 or 2 cases, the mother, abusing the child.
And in what sort of state is the parent in when they're coming to you and asking for help?
Absolutely devastated, beside themselves, and don't know which way to turn, which way to go, because no one's believing them or believing the child what's taking place. And children don't make up the sort of stories that I hear that's being done to them. It's just devastating for the rest of the family and relatives and grandparents.
Well, when you get the evidence, and as you say, there's some legalities around what you can actually use, how do you use, where does that evidence go? Where does the tape go?
The police will listen to it. We never say how we got the evidence. Usually plant a little recorder in a toy or a teddy bear or something like that that the child takes in regularly when visits the other parent, especially overnight visits. And what'll then happen, there won't be any overnight visits. It'll only be supervised during the daytime, and the child is picked up at a contact centre and has to be brought back after about 6 or 8 hours.
And has there been any sort of criminal prosecution against the offender?
There has been. And, in the case just recently, there was, where the little boy, 7-year-old boy, was sexually molested and encouraged to do all sorts of things with his father that children should just never know about.
Mm. Wow. that must give you an insight into really the darker parts of people's lives. What is it like being privy to other people's private lives? This is actually a question that's come in from a listener, also called Emma. Good on you, Emma. Excellent question. What is it like to be privy to other people's private lives and deepest secrets?
Well, you sort of become conditioned to it over as many years as I've been there. And I'm out there to help. I love helping. And many times I say, look, don't call me a private investigator, call me a gatherer of information. And I'll gather that information for you to present back to your solicitor or to the police or where it needs to go to have some action.
Mm. Well, if like Emma, who has sent in that question via ABC Brisbane's Facebook page, you also have a question, something you're curious about from Keith Shafirius, the gatherer of information, private investigator in Brisbane for 48 years, then you can head to Facebook. You could call 1300 222 612 and you can text 0467 922 612. Keith, under what circumstances would you refuse a job? Have you refused work?
Yes, I have. If it doesn't add up, what people will tell me, and this is on all sorts of cases, not just child and domestic and matrimonial, I do a quick background or check myself to see if these people, their bona fides are correct. If I feel there's something not right, I'd rather not work for them. And on the child recoveries I did around the world, I accepted about 3 out of 5 cases, as it was more or less spite by the other person who was trying to get the child back. And that person was abusing the child, and the reason the mother, in most cases, took off somewhere else in the world is to get the child away from what was happening.
Mm. This has been the bulk of your work, has it, bringing children
at one stage
back?
It was, yeah. It was probably a 20%, 25% of my work when I had the large business.
Mm. How do you go about doing that? I want to ask you a bit about the process, because this really hit the headlines in the last couple of years with the case in the Middle East that the commercial TV show went along and who was paying for it and... you know, the methods used by the investigators who ended up in jail. All those things went wrong. The children are still there. The mother's here in Brisbane.
Yes.
So when you take on this sort of work, what's the process that you go through?
I check out the bona fides of the client and I'll
How do you do that?
Just background searches through whatever means I have, and I have access to some... fairly private areas that I can check people out. And
how'd you get that access?
Being honest and well known and not disclosing.
Not going to give me the answer to that one, is he? Okay, Keith. And so you check the bona fides of the person?
I'm a member of the World Association of Detectives, a life member of the World Association of Detectives, and there's some really good people. We've got about 900 members worldwide, and some of those members are ex-military, ex-FBI, ex-special services in all countries, including the Middle Eastern countries. And I will get those people to check out before I go there and see the living conditions and if the child is there or children are there, and I get really good support.
Through that association?
Through that association.
Through contacts?
Through contacts, yes. And the, you know, the members have got contacts who can get all sorts of information because of their background.
Can you talk me through an example? I mean, not mentioning names or anything, but how did you go about getting some children back to their parent here in Australia?
It was a matter of getting into the country. Sometimes I've gone in illegally, got into the next country, and crept across the border, like in Poland, flew into Germany, and went across the border without alerting anyone. Had two cars hired, one in Poland, one in Germany. Found an old wartime border crossing and went across there. And on the way back, that's how we brought the child out, through that border crossing. There was no one there, and they wouldn't have been aware of what took place. So it's very covert, undercover, if you like to call it, to get into a country. It's much more difficult now since all the terrorism and that borders are patrolled a lot more. The last case I did was about a year before that one you mentioned before, with one of the large medias going in. Well, that same media came with me to Turkey, and I wouldn't allow them to be up front or to be too close, and kept them at arm's length.
When you go in and see the child for the first time, they must be terrified.
I always have someone they know, the mother, an aunt or grandmother, grandfather or someone like that with me, and most times they, as soon as they see that relative, they come running. And only one I had in Poland again, where when the little boy saw his mother, he went to push her away. But all of a sudden he realised who it was, and he was happy. We couldn't get his sister out at the same time, and I defied all odds and went back about 2 or 3 months later and got his sister out as well.
And when you think back on these cases, do you question whether you've done the right thing?
I, as I said before, I accept about three out of five of those cases, and I'm still in contact with some of those children, and you know, they've said to me, "Keith, goodness knows where I would have been now if it wasn't for you." You know, similar to one family I got out of a cult. They have said, "Keith, you know, who knows where we would have been if it wasn't for you." So it always makes me feel good when those people come. And to answer your question, yes, I do feel good about what I've been doing.
Now, is that the cult story that you rang in about to the show in the last couple of weeks, Keith? Yeah, so if you want to listen to that, you can head to the Focus website and look up the cult show that we did. And Keith was employed to get some a mother and children out of a cult. Now, talking about retrieval of children from overseas, it's not just children, is it, either? Because there was a woman in New York who wanted you to get her puppy.
Yeah, I worked for her for many years. She was a lawyer from Sydney, and so was her husband. They both moved over to New York to positions within media, and the husband needed some surveillance on him, and I won't go into that too much, but she trusted me with everything I did, every report I gave her, and she employed me to go over there to keep a watch on a certain person who had gone over from Australia, a female, and to live in Manhattan, which was pretty good for 6 weeks. It was a place where you can't book into. You have to be someone from a high place to get in there. So a friend in Abu Dhabi was able to get me in there as an executive of their airline.
Oh, undercover in Manhattan.
Mm, and then she called me another time, and one of her little poodles, white poodle, had gone missing. They were on holidays at their holiday home on Long Island, and dog went missing, so she engaged my services and flew me over there to help find the dog. I didn't find the dog. I did find a bit of white poodle hair on some of the briars and bushes. So
so you failed.
I failed.
Basically.
I failed. Poor puppy.
Yeah. Case not closed. Stephen in Fitzgibbon has called in. Hello.
Hello, Emma and Keith. How are you?
What's your question for Keith?
Listen, I'd just like to ask Keith, have you ever had to investigate the police?
Have you had to investigate the police, Keith? Good question, Stephen.
Stephen, no. But people have questioned police, and I said no, but yet there was one guy who wanted a fairly high-ranking police officer investigated, but I refused to do that because I do get fairly good assistance and help from the police force, and I give them a lot of information. Only recently I gave them a huge drug job that I happened to come across, and various other things that the police should be investigating that I can't. And by the same token, I get to do a lot where the police have started on, and like on suicides or missing persons, where the parents can't get closure from the police investigation. So they employ us guys to get that closure for them.
Mm. Did something prompt that question, Stephen?
Oh, yes. I won't mention any details, but through the years, coincidentally, I've witnessed some things, and when I tried to see her address, I realised the police seem to be untouchable.
Mm.
Okay.
Thank you very much for your call. I mean, Keith, in answering that, I mean, obviously you rely on the police, and the police give you business as well. But are there circumstances where you would think, yeah, I've got to investigate a police officer?
It's questionable sometimes, but I keep away from that, and certainly wouldn't investigate a police officer unless there was real reasons. And there was a few years ago where a father was molesting a child, and his best mate was a policeman and living at the same house. And the mother could never get any help from the police.
So what did you do?
Just she had to go through the courts and try and get help another way, and all of a sudden it was found out, and the policeman was severely reprimanded. And there were two cases like that.
Mm. Was there the suggestion that the police officer was also molesting the child?
Yes.
Mm. Was there ever action taken against him and the father?
There wasn't sufficient evidence, but yes, there was action taken, and a transfer from a city suburban station out to the sticks somewhere.
Mm. Mm. That does not sound good.
Mm. Mm. Mm.
The Dark Insights into Human Nature as well, with Keith Chafirius, private investigator, finder of information in Brisbane. On Focus today, ABC Radio Brisbane, you're with Emma Griffiths. If you've got a question for Keith, who has worked as a private investigator for nearly 50 years around Brisbane, Australia and the world, you've got about another 10 minutes or so. Susan in Capera says this, Keith. Mm-hmm. Susan says, years ago, I hired a private detective in Brisbane for two purposes. First, my ex-spouse would not tell me where he was living and wanting to take our young daughter for access, so I had him tailed. Second, I would get a background report on new boyfriends, as I figured that single mums with daughters are particularly vulnerable to predator men. So that's where Susan's had to call on the services of a private investigator. Are they fairly common requests?
That sort of thing is. We get lots of requests to locate addresses, and it's fairly difficult sometimes, so sometimes we'll revert to electronic tracking of the vehicle. No, that's not illegal in Queensland. Every other state it is, but not in Queensland.
It's not illegal in Queensland?
No, it's amazing.
He's smiling. Do you think it should be illegal?
Yes.
But while it's still legal, you'll use it. Now, also another question that's come in, no name. So if you're going to text in questions, please do give us a first name. Just makes it all feel a lot more friendly. The number is 0467 922 612. This question is, what was your most difficult case? Was it the poodle?
No. There are difficult cases which have a good ending. And one was an international case back in 1998, I think it was. A large accounting company from Canada employed my services to find some assets of a guy who had gone bankrupt. Now, the assets were a Learjet, or two Learjets, and a small ship, 80-passenger ship. He had hidden those, and you wouldn't think anyone could hide things like that. They thought he was using them or had hired them out to someone operating off Tasmania or New Zealand, because the ship, little ship, was equipped to go to the Antarctic. And I made some inquiries, and it was all pointing to the ship would be working out of Ushuaia on the southern tip of South America. And that was a case where I did for costs only, unless I found the equipment, and then a good percentage of the value of the equipment when it was sold off.
How much is a ship like that worth if it's equipped to go to Antarctic waters and can have 80 people on there?
Well, they were sold off after I found them, and it was about $7 million all up for the two aircraft, and that was pretty cheap. So I went to Ushuaia and made a few inquiries. And, yep, the ship was coming in there and going over to the Falkland Islands. So I went to the Falkland Islands as well, and they were using those Learjets to bring people down from North America and the Northern Hemisphere down to Falkland Islands. So it was quite difficult, quite stretched out, and... as I said, ends up pretty good. I got to know someone in the Argentinian Air Force, and I went down to their base on the Antarctic to Morambio and had lunch down there when I went down to service the base.
And you said this job wasn't glamorous at all. Keith Shafirius. Hey, speaking of international events as well, there's some breaking news coming through at the moment that the North Korean president, Kim Jong-un, is going to meet the US president, Donald Trump, by May. So they've got a couple of months to work out a date. What would you like to know about people in those sorts of positions, Keith?
Everything about them. You know, what makes them think? What makes them think they're so good and can destroy the rest of the world with the touch of a button? And I think they believe in themselves, believe they can, until war breaks out and they're obliterated.
Yeah, getting into the psyche of Kim Jong-un and Donald Trump. Now, you've obviously met a lot of people with a lot of money. Over the years. I mean, investigating people who own small ships and Learjets and homes in Long Island and white poodles. How much does it cost to engage the services of a private investigator?
It varies, Emma. Probably the highest fee I ever got, I was working for a Swedish father whose children were in the Philippines. Well, not children, a little boy. He had met a... Filipino girl in Australia, and the marriage broke up and she took off back to the Philippines. But the Swedish legal aid system paid all fees for him to try and get his child back, and that cost about $1.4 million. Not all to me, there were some bribes and some other people to be paid.
But that's how it works in lots of countries, isn't it?
That's how it works, and that story is in my book.
Having to pay bribes. Mm. Yeah, that's right, because Keith has written a book with Grantley Keyser, who's a columnist in the for News Limited. It came out 8 years ago, called The Retriever. So it focuses a lot on the children that you've brought back to parents.
That's right, and there's a movie contract now on the book to produce a movie.
Wonder if that's going to be like Magnum PI. A couple of questions that have come in. Catherine says, have you ever investigated an environmental case like illegal dumping or polluting a waterway?
Yes, I've had a few of those where, and probably more than a few, where illegal dumping, and the government service has engaged our services to set up surveillance and keep surveillance to identify the people who are dumping in restricted areas and in waterways. And on each occasion, we caught them. And
what sort of things were they dumping?
Asbestos and all sorts of garbage, building materials. Builders would go and just, instead of going to the tip, they just take it to a place nearby. And I just stumbled across some in the last week on an allotment in Chelmer where there were mango trees there and it was vacant. And
so you were nicking the mangoes?
I used to nick the mangoes, go and get a few mangoes. And last week when I went in, the mangoes were all gone, but there's all this building material dumped there.
So you're like, who's the builder? Who's got my mangoes? Because they've gone there, they've dumped the stuff, they picked all your mangoes.
Yeah.
Did you find them? Are you going to pursue it?
No.
Mm. People being naughty all over the place. Mm. Matt in Wynnum says, do you worry that someone you investigate may seek you out with the intention of getting back at you? Or has that already happened?
I never fear anyone or anything, and probably a little bit now as I'm getting older, but I've never had fear of anyone or anything.
That's something your dad taught you?
Probably, yeah, he did, and always be tough and ready. And I did have one case back in the 1970s where a guy phoned me and accused me of doing all sorts of stuff, and he said, as soon as I find you, I'm going to kill you. I said, well, don't worry finding me. Let's meet now. Let's meet this afternoon. And he went quiet and thought for a while. He said, no, you guys carry guns, don't you?
And do you?
No, I was licensed, but never carried guns, only for security. I didn't believe in carrying guns because guns just invite violence. If someone sees you with a gun.
When you say you were licensed and you used them for security, what do you mean? You had them
security
in a drawer?
Yeah.
You had them locked away?
Yeah, in a safe. And just if there was a security job to escort someone from the airport, like a high-ranking businessman or cash carry, which we did for one of the fast food chains, used to bank their daily earnings for them. And that's the only time I would carry the gun.
Mm. Mm. Interesting. We're going to have a chat about gun laws next Tuesday, actually, looking at what's happening with them in Australia at the moment. But you think if somebody sees you carrying a gun, that it does incite violence.
Yeah, and I'm not licensed. I handed my guns in probably 8 or 10 years ago because I don't need them. I don't do security work and don't need the guns.
And what about the guys that work for you?
Only a couple of guys who did security had guns, and you can't get a gun just because you're a private investigator. You have to be doing security, and you have to name the clients you're doing that security for. And it's extremely strict now to be able to get a concealable firearm licence.
Mm. What's in your toolkit, Keith? Like, we've spoken about surveillance, going undercover, maybe putting an electronic, what is it, like a bug on somebody's car, all those sorts of things.
Listening device. there's various things people have, and I don't wish to disclose all of it, but you know, many cameras, many listening devices, and recorders, directional microphones, and cameras, good cameras, miniature cameras.
Do you have a hidden camera on you now?
No.
Well, you don't really need one because there's about six cameras in this radio studio anyway.
They're all watching me.
And over all of this work that you have done, what have you learned about human nature? What have you learned about people?
Take them as you find them, and with some, size them up. Don't believe what they're telling you at the time until you do your own research on them. Pardon me.
So do you take them as you find them, or do you hold back trust and judgment?
You could probably say that. Take them as you find them, but hold back a little bit on judgment until you get to know them better.
Mm. Sky in Fairfield has got a question for you, and I think we had a little bit of a chat about this earlier, but Sky's wondering, have you ever started investigating somebody for a client and then found out you've been deceived by the client, so the client had a sinister motive themselves?
Yes, I have, and I try to establish that in the beginning. And
when you were talking about checking out the client's bona fides.
That's right, yeah.
But in a couple of cases, you've gotten into the case and then realised?
Yes, realised that they had an ulterior motive for wanting to find out information, and I would stop. I would challenge the client and then stop and not pass on any information.
How often has that happened?
Not very often. Wouldn't even be once a year. So very, very rarely.
Mm.
And most of it I get to know beforehand.
Mm. We've got another question that's actually just come in on the phone. Is Mish. Mish, you're in Melbourne.
Mm. Hi, Emma. Hi.
What's your question for Keith?
Keith, have you ever investigated any large pedophile rings in Australia?
Not large pedophile rings, but smaller ones where there has been pedophilia with children. One involved five or six parents, fathers, with their own children, and they were handing their children around this circle of abusers. And I was able to get fairly close there and get photographic evidence, and all of those people were charged by the police with the information I gave to the police, and that was several years ago.
And where were they?
That was out past Toowoomba in Queensland.
Mish, thanks very much for your question. Another one's come in from Catherine in Brookfield. Hi, Keith, says Catherine. I think I have what it takes to be a private investigator. Would you take on an apprentice?
I really don't have the facilities now. I did operate a training college for private investigators in the early 1990s, and the government were paying for people to be trained, and I ran that for a couple of years, but found that too many people were being trained as in the basics of private investigation, and they weren't all getting jobs or employment, and I just felt guilty that I was taking money and not getting them into the employment they were seeking.
Mm.
So I closed the college and moved on from that.
Catherine, keep trying, though.
Mm.
It does bring the question up, though, what do you think it takes to be a good private investigator? Like, what does Catherine actually need to have what it takes?
To be a self-starter, you can't have someone telling you what to do all of the time. Just to be a self-starter, don't be afraid of anything or anyone, and be a good communicator, and you know, what else? Be honest, because you do need to get a licence. Through the Queensland government.
Be honest, but a bit sneaky.
You could say that.
I could say that, he says. There you go, Catherine, if you think that's what you are, you have. Keith Shafirius, thank you so much for the chat today. I'm sure we could keep going on and on.
Mm-hmm.
Best of luck with your movie now that's going to happen.
Hopefully, but as it, you know, it's been going on for 18 months now, and they say it can take 2 or 3 or 4 years to get it off the ground.
Even longer.
Even longer, that's right.
Chris Hemsworth playing Keith Chaffirius. I can see it now. Thank you so much.
Emma Griffiths. Focus on ABC Radio Brisbane.
Now, it has been a big week. Jacob Roebuck is our social media guru, coordinator. I don't know, you're so much more as well, Jacob.
I haven't been here for a few weeks. I was just saying, this is probably, I think, the first time in 3 weeks I've done this segment, because I've been away, it was public holiday, I was off on training.
You're here now.
I'm here now, that's it. And I'm giving a recap of some of the best parts of the past week of Focus. And we kicked off pretty strong. Monday, we're talking about working mums. What's the biggest challenge for a working mum? And we got some really great feedback and comments saying all mums are working mums. And that's from Meg. My job is a piece of cake compared to when my children were small and I stayed at home. It's the hardest I've ever worked. My pay, the thanks my grown-up children give me, I did the hard yards. That I did the hard yards then.
Yes, I feel you, Meg.
Mm-hmm. And Marlon said one of the biggest struggles is for a working mum with a boss that's not understanding, who forces or guilts you into working late every night rather than getting home to be with your kids. I can imagine that's extremely frustrating. And finally, Anne, who was very similar to Marlon, saying time. She never felt like the feeling you were never doing anything as well as you'd like, that's all sorts of things, being a mum, being a wife, being a partner, work as well. So, really interesting stuff. But we also got a call during the show, which was a bit different. It was from Dan, who was a single working dad raising a couple of kids by himself. And have a listen to what he had to say, because it was quite an interesting take.
Yeah, I was a single dad, a single full-time dad up until about 4 years ago. And the interesting thing I found in my workplace was that my performance was good with my job, and I did very, very well in those. It was recognised on a quite a regular basis. But my two bosses were single guys, and I can remember them being counselling me about taking time off because my kid was sick. And the thing was, even the married women, it was considered okay. But for me, it was a case, well, you're not going to get forward in your career if you're taking time off because your child needs care.
And in what way did they make this clear to you? Was it overt sort of statements?
It was basically, as I said to you, it was a case of, Dad, if you need to take time off because of your sick son, it's not going to help your career.
What did you end up doing?
Left the job.
Did you find a better one?
Funny thing is, I did. It was a very interesting experience, actually, just the view that was taken that, you know, as a young dog, in those days, in my mid-30s, that I should be focusing on career only, and that being a single father was a detriment to my career.
Look at that. Got to find a new job, do the right thing, move away. So really great story there from Dan, and not to make it all about men, but yeah, it's an interesting point of view, and I'm sure there's a couple of people in a similar situation who are going through that. But that brings us to Tuesday. Autism. And this was a really, really powerful show. And it was sort of one of those ones where not a lot of people, or autism doesn't get talked about a whole heap, though it's estimated about 1 in 100 people have it. So chances are probably every day you'd meet someone, at least maybe one or two.
In fact, there are other estimates that say 1 in 60.
Wow. So very, quite common compared to a lot of other things as well. And we had Alex on, who was really, really great. He has autism, or is diagnosed with an autism spectrum disorder. And we had a chat just sort of about what his life was like, how he found it. But then before he left, he just wanted to make one final comment that really resonated with everyone on the Focus team and sort of stuck with us. So have a listen to this.
I just want to say on behalf of autistic people everywhere that I utterly condemn the comments of the anti-vaccination lobby, who I feel essentially are saying that they would rather their children potentially end up dead from the various, from rubella or pertussis or whatever, than end up as people like me. I find that so fundamentally insulting, and I know that I'm not the only one.
No, in fact, there were other comments on our Facebook page to that effect that day as well. Alex, thanks again for speaking with us. Fantastic to get that point of view.
Really great, and it's one that I've never heard before as well, so it was really nice hearing that different voice on it as well. And we also heard from Emma, who said her son wasn't diagnosed with Asperger's until his late 30s.
No, that's Kat on the Sunshine Coast.
Oh, Kat on the Sunshine Coast,
sorry.
She
just starts off with, hi, Emma.
Hi, Emma.
Because that's me.
How silly of me. Sorry.
Sorry, J-Ro.
Kat on the Sunshine Coast. I should have read my own notes a bit better. But saying, yeah, her son didn't get diagnosed until late 30s, which I can imagine would have been very difficult for him and the family growing up till then. Yeah, it's one of those things where I think we really need to bring it to the front and sort of look at this issue and look at ways that we can better help and support those families and the communities that are sort of built around supporting these people with autism.
Yes.
So, great stuff. Anyway, it's like a bit less emotional now.
Yes, well, it could get that way, though, and it's certainly been in the news a lot. So on Wednesday, we tried to explain why Donald Trump's announcement around tariffs on steel and aluminium or aluminum. Sorry about that, is actually quite so significant for the world and for us.
Yeah, so look, and it's still, I'm still a little bit confused about it, but it was really great to sit down and sort of do something a bit different and a bit great on Focus.
Well, the best brains in the world are confused about it because now today Donald Trump is also talking about which countries will get exemptions, and we're not clear yet if Australia will. Yesterday, on International Women's Day, that whole discussion really left me thinking about how we should better mark the day, really, but we had a pretty good discussion on the show.
Yeah, we had a really great discussion on the show. And it was, it was really nice, actually, to be able to sit back and just listen to some people who are much smarter than I am talk about things that sort of I don't really understand quite as well as them, and really appreciate some different points of view on the subject as well. But one thing we did want to play was our producer, Karina Hogan, was out on Tuesday afternoon getting some vox pops of us, of asking people what feminism meant to them. And she was confronted by a guy who was sort of giving a really hard time to herself and the three ladies that she was talking to. And there's a recording of that. So have a listen to this and we'll talk a bit about it afterwards.
It's so ironic that I should be asking you about feminism and someone's just come up and said that to you.
Yeah. That's pretty disgusting. You shouldn't say that. We're only 17.
You know what?
Mate, where I think this it's inappropriate comes for you from? To say that to the
Sorry.
Yeah, I don't think that's very...
That's feminism.
I'm
going
to say it again.
Okay.
What do you think of my shirt?
Nothing.
F*** off. How does that sound? What do you think of my shirt? That's inappropriate, is it?
Yeah, Jacob, it was pretty upsetting, and Karina was pretty shaken after that because the man ended up shoving her and bystanders stepped in. So That sort of personal space issue for women where you're out in public and you're just never sure that you're 100% safe, I think. That was a big part of the conversation yesterday. But we also had some amazing men call in, and shall we have a listen to Michael?
Yeah, let's have a listen to Michael.
One of the things I find as a male in this space is that there are other men that throw roadblocks in your way to try and move you away from this agenda, because they see it as a very binary us or them battle. And the common accusations I get thrown at me is you must be a man hater, or in a very insulting tone, it's you're a woman, with that sort of bile attached to it.
What do you say to them?
Well, it was an interesting argument, because I just said to them, I said, listen, I'm happy to run with your argument. I said, using your logic, when the Auschwitz horrors happened in World War II, did you have to be a Jew to speak out against it? When Mandela spoke out against apartheid, did you have to be black South African to speak out against it? And when animals go through cruelty, did you have to be a dog to speak out against it? And he said, what's your point? And I said, well, you don't have to belong to a group to speak out against it. So you trying to emasculate me doesn't make me a woman.
And what has it revealed to you, do you think, about feminism, the relations between men and women?
Well, I think there are so many men there that just see, they don't see the human race as one race. They just see it as men and women existing in two separate universes. And that's the bit that I keep saying to them, we're just a part of the human race, and your wife and your sister and your mum they're all part of our family, and why are they existing in this separate world?
It was such an interesting take on it as well. I loved hearing from you, Michael. Thank you.
Yeah, and that's right. Michael was a White Ribbon ambassador and educator as well. So big thanks to everyone who contributed throughout the week on Focus, and I'll see you next Friday.
Thank you very much to you as well, Jacob Roebuck. And now Focus is produced by Amanda Dell on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Ruth Deglar on Thursday and Friday. Thanks to them. And thanks to you for your calls, your texts, your stories, for listening, for emails that we're getting as well. Back with you on Monday at 10.
Craig Zonka and Rebecca Levingston.
If it's happening in Brisbane and you need to know about it,
we're already out of bed and bringing it to the table.
For breakfast with you.
Weekday mornings from 6.
On ABC Radio, Brisbane.